Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Amusement park rides, flying in a plane, sailing in a boat, even sitting in the backseat of a car can trigger motion sickness. For many of us, nausea, dizziness, sometimes even vomiting are the result. Oddly enough, you don't have to be moving to experience it. With the advent of virtual reality, you can be sitting perfectly still, looking at a video image, and feel motion sickness. The disorder has been recognized for thousands of years, going as far back as Hippocrates, the Greek physician regarded as the father of modern medicine.
But understanding why some people can rocket into space and others can't even read a book in the car is still up for debate. While one long-held theory involves the inner ear and the vestibular system, new studies are challenging that assumption. Here to explain motion sickness and his groundbreaking research into its causes is Dr. Thomas Stoffregen, professor of kinesiology at the University of Minnesota. He has been studying motion sickness for more than 25 years, including seasickness, Air Force flight simulators, console video games, and head-mounted virtual reality displays.
Welcome to Take Care. Thank you for coming on our show.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I have a personal vested interest in this because I suffer from terrible motion sickness. And if you talk to most people and you ask about it, they will say that it involves the inner ear. And I've looked into it. The belief has been for a very long time that you get conflicting information from your body, your eyes, your inner ear, resulting in confusion between some of those senses. But your work is groundbreaking and different. You've got a different theory regarding motion sickness. Would you explain that for us?
Let me just first say that the traditional theory based on this idea of sensory conflict is based on the idea that when you are in an unusual situation, such as being on a ship or in the backseat of a car or something like that, that the stimulation of your eyes and your middle ear and as you say, your body, the sensors in your body and stuff like that are different from normal experience, and that difference is what makes you sick. So my response to that is, yes, indeed. In those situations, the stimulation of those sensory systems is different. There's no question about that. That's absolutely the case. The debate, if you will, is whether that difference is what actually is responsible for motion sickness, and my argument is that it is not. So one way to think about this is that, okay, so, you know, let's take the example of a ship. When you get on a ship and the surface, you know, the thing you're standing on is moving underneath you, then you are in fact going to have highly novel and unusual stimulation of the sensors in your ankles, and as the ship makes your body sway, the simulation or visual system, all that kind of stuff. Yes, you will have unusual patterns of sensory stimulation, but that is not the only thing that is different about being on a ship. And that is what gets us into the possibility of alternative explanations. You sort of take a step back and say, okay, sensory stimulation is different on a ship, but what else is different on a ship? And one answer is that when you're standing on something that's moving underneath you in an unpredictable way that you cannot control, that is going to challenge the physical control of your body. You're going to have to learn new ways to contract those leg muscles to maintain your balance, to keep from falling over in plain English. There's a sort of a physical learning, motor skill learning component there. Some people pick up motor skills really rapidly, learn to play ball or whatever it is easily and naturally, and other people, don't learn quite so rapidly.
So you're saying that it comes down to postural instability?
Yes. That's what the theory's called. And yes, absolutely. So again, I think that the sort of logic of this is pretty direct, that, you know, you stand on a wobbly surface and it's going to make you wobbly. Yes, it's going to change your sensory stimulation, but it's also going to make you wobbly, and those are logically separate things.
How does sitting in the back seat of a car reading apply to this? Because, yes, there's movement in the car, but it's not the same as having to balance on a ship.
I beg to differ.
Okay,
I beg
so
to differ.
Explain that. Explain, because so many people get car sick. It's unfortunate because they can't spend their time and pass the hours by reading. So they're
right.
Sitting in a car and they're looking down at something in their lap. Explain how that's the same situation as being on a wobbly boat.
let's look at some examples here. So if you are sitting in the backseat of a car that is on an interstate highway that's pretty straight and the driver has turned on cruise control, then it's extremely unlikely that you're going to get sick. You can read, you know, War and Peace and you won't get sick. Okay. When do people get car sick reading? It's when they're in traffic. And what that means is that when they're slowing down and speeding up, when they're turning left and turning right, and that all means accelerations of one kind or another. And accelerations are an issue because you have to, they displace the car underneath you, and now we're right back where the ship was. Okay, anytime you push the gas pedal, the brake pedal, or turn the wheel, you're moving the car underneath the body. And the body has to be stabilized relative to that motion. You know, if you're in the back seat and, you know, you're not looking at the road or the horizon or whatever, then you're not really, the motions of the automobile, the accelerations of the automobile are not predictable and not obviously not controlled by you. And so you have logically the identical situation.
Okay, so what you're saying, it's perceived postural instability.
No.
But you can feel unstable even though you're sitting down.
No, it's not about subjective awareness of any kind whatsoever. It is about physical instability. It's the same, you know, if you were balancing a pencil on your fingertip, that would be easy to do when cruise control was on and incredibly hard to do when cruise control was off. The pencil doesn't perceive anything. It's either stably balanced or it isn't.
We're going to pursue this line of questioning, but I just want to let our audience know, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And today we're talking about motion sickness with Dr. Thomas Stoffregen. He is professor of kinesiology at the University of Minnesota. He's been studying motion sickness for more than 25 years. Let me then jump back to something, because I always have terrible motion sickness. I am the one Lorraine refers to who cannot read in the car. And I do get motion sickness on a boat. However, I'm able to stand in the bow of a boat as long as I can see the horizon. And even though it becomes extremely turbulent, I don't get motion sickness in that situation.
Yes, indeed.
Explain that.
Oh, it's because you're thinking about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay. Well, my arms are not out, and there's not a good-looking man with his arms wrapped around me, but okay.
Kidding aside, that's the wonderful thing about this. So the boat moves underneath you, or the car moves underneath you, as the case may be, and you cannot control or predict those motions, and you need some way to stabilize your body. And this is where perception actually does come in. And when I say perception, I don't mean conscious awareness, because thankfully we're not often consciously aware of how our body's moving. But I'm talking about perceptual inputs that go on below, underneath the level of consciousness. So when you're on a surface that's moving in unpredictable, uncontrollable ways, you need some information that will help you to tell, again, not at the conscious level, but will help you to tell what motion is coming from the ground and what motion is coming from me. Am I leaning forward or is the ship tilting backward under me? And that matters in terms of, you know, how I'm going to respond, what muscles I'm going to need to contract, and how much I'm going to need to contract them, and what joints to bend, and all that kind of stuff. So there's a real quantitative need. I need to know exactly what motion is going on here, and I need some information about that. I need to perceive that somehow. Well, your friendly neighborhood physicist will tell you that under Newton and under Einstein, that if you have only the input from your physical contact with the vehicle, you know, being pushed around, then in physical terms, there is no information. You know, it's all about relativity and relative motion. It is not possible, logically, to distinguish the motion of the ship from the motion of the body. One could be moving relative to the other, or vice versa. So that's a real conundrum. It's like, oh, well, okay, so what do I do now? The horizon has this amazing property in that the horizon is, certainly at sea, that's the easiest place to explain it. The horizon is the edge of the Earth, right? It's the edge, the visible edge of the Earth. And you know what? The ship is moving relative to the Earth. So is the car. And for that reason, if you have information, if you can gain information, obtain information about the horizon, then in principle that gives you information about how the ship is moving relative to the Earth, which in turn makes it possible, again in principle, for you to say, oh, this much of the motion I'm feeling is coming from the ship, and the rest of it, therefore, is coming from me.
So who is most prone to motion sickness? Because it doesn't affect all of us, and some have it in a more severe form than others.
Well, that's a wonderful question to which we have only imperfect answers. Needless to say, it depends on who you talk to and their theoretical perspective. As far as I'm concerned, the people are more prone to motion sickness if they have less robust ability to stabilize the body. I mean, that's I'm kind of required to say that by my theoretical perspective, and I have no problem saying that. So you look at factors that make the body more stable or less stable, okay? And we're going to get into some very politically difficult stuff here. And this is, it's very strange that I'm in the career that I've chosen that I suddenly find myself talking about sexual politics, but here we go. If you, again, think about a pencil, think about balancing a pencil on your fingertip. Now, if you have a brand new pencil that's as long as a pencil is, and you balance that on your fingertip, it's going to be pretty easy to do. If you break that pencil in half, or just take an old pencil and balance it on your fingertip, it's going to be much more difficult. And you can try this at home, and I encourage you to do so. This is about what's called the height of the center of mass, where the weight is, if you will. And when the pencil is long, then there's more mass up high. And when the pencil is short, then there's more mass down low. And it turns out mechanically, again, you can talk to your friendly neighborhood physicist about this. It turns out that mechanically, having the mass up high is simply more stable. You remember Bobo dolls?
I remember Bobo dolls because I use that metaphor all the time.
Okay. Well, a Bobo doll is a simulated person where all the mass is at the bottom. And it is incredibly easy to destabilize a Bobo doll. That's the point. That's why they make them the way that they are. You tap the top of it, and it falls way over. If you turn that Bobo doll upside down, and you were somehow able to balance it, it would take a great deal more force to get it to fall over.
So that would explain gender differences in terms of motion
sickness.
You
have hit the nail squarely on the head, and that is where things get, where the conversation becomes very, very hard to put into politically acceptable words. I am not going to tell you that women are inherently less stable than men. I would not be well advised to say that because, for reasons that you understand. But it is the case that, number one, men are taller than women. Women are shorter than men. So that's one issue. But over and above that, the center of mass, men tend to carry their weight in their chest and women tend to carry their weight in their hips. So in addition to the height difference, you also have this mass distribution difference. And there are a number of other physical differences between the sexes that contribute to this same thing in mechanical terms, not in political terms, not in legal terms, but in mechanical terms. Women are more like the short pencils and guys are more like the tall pencils.
What percentage of women are more prone to it versus men?
This is an area that has received some very extensive documentation, and this is not research that I did, but stuff that's been done and sometimes on heroic scales. There was a study done with 20,000 passengers on ocean-going ferries, just actual people on actual ferries out on the ocean, and it was found that the ratio of seasickness in women to men was, I believe it was 5-3. So for every 3 men that got seasick, 5 women got seasick.
I think we should talk about, we have a couple of minutes left with you, and I'm wondering about solutions and remedies for motion sickness, and wondering if your theory, which you've been working on for many, many years, and isn't exactly the same as the widely held belief about this, the senses being confused, etc., does that help us know how to treat motion sickness? You're looking at a different way. You have a different explanation for its origin. But how will that help the person that's listening, that's thinking, oh, boy, maybe they, now that they know why it happens and it's different than what we thought, is there something I can do about it?
Yes. The answer is yes. And my theory leads directly to the kinds of interventions, to certain kinds of interventions, namely to things that will help to stabilize the body. So my theory says, never mind about your sensory inputs. Just forget about them. They don't matter. What you need to concentrate on is figuring out ways to stabilize the body. If you're in an automobile, you can stabilize the body by using the headrest. If you are on a ship, you can stabilize the body by looking at the horizon. If in both cases, you can stabilize. Well, pardon me, if you're on a ship, People contact me about this all the time. I'm going on a cruise. What should I do? And I always tell them the same thing, which is, number one, go up on deck where you can see their eyes. And number two, sit down. Number three, use the headrest. Avoid alcohol. But there's a little quirk here, and I hope I have time to get this in. There's a little quirk here because stability of the body is not an absolute thing. It's a relative thing. And stability is in terms of the task that you are attempting to accomplish. And I'll cut right to the chase here because reading is the thing. If you are vegging out, if you're in an automobile and you're just, you know, thinking your own personal thoughts and looking at nothing in particular, then you don't, it doesn't really matter where your eyes are pointed. And for that reason, it doesn't matter a whole lot what your head is doing, or for that matter, your torso. By contrast, if you are reading is an extremely demanding activity in terms of the eyes. They must be pointed and moved with great precision in order to see the words that you want to see and to have them be in focus and so forth and so on. And for that reason, reading makes you much, much more prone to being destabilized. And vegging out and staring off into the distance or at your toes or whatever makes you much more resistant to being destabilized. And that is the reason that reading in a car or reading on a ship is particularly problematic.